Hi, everybody, and welcome to Stories from the Midlife Crisis Dance Party. My name is Ray Serebrin, and I am the host of the Midlife Crisis Dance Party radio program on KPTZ in Port Townsend. The following is one of our story time segments that we present each week. I hope you enjoy it.
Ah, you're just in time for a story.
When the sky is dark and the moon aglow and the morning star burning from afar enters into view, all that I can say, all that I can know, is that I'll be dreaming he says of you.
Yes, that's our theme song, my friends, to story time on the Midlife Crisis Dance Party. Today's story is a very personal one. It's called Learning to Dress Myself, and it's far less shocking than it sounds, and it goes like this. A few mornings ago, I was getting dressed for a journey into Seattle, and I was puzzling over what to wear. And out of the blue, I had one of those moments where you question your basic assumptions about life. And my question to myself at that moment was, why do I give a damn about what I'm going to wear? Why am I puzzling over it? Why do I care? And in that instant, as I'm thinking, why do I care about how I'm going to look? I found myself remembering the first time I became aware of the importance of clothing. And when I first became aware that how I dressed could impact how I felt about myself and how I was perceived. My first memory of fashion awareness took place during the summer between the 6th and the 7th grade. My family had just moved into a new neighborhood and I was entering a new junior high school, as they were called at the time. Since we had just moved, I would have no friends at the new school, and of course I wanted to make a good impression. I wanted to be accepted. I do not recall specifically if having the proper clothing for school was important to me, but it was definitely important for my mother. My mother was an attractive woman, and she always was well turned out. She dressed up, and she made up to go to the supermarket. She cared about fashion. She had lots of clothes and lots of jewelry. So it was important to her that I dressed properly and that I had the perfect look for my first day of school. Given my mother's attention to her looks, it is odd to me that she ended up with my father. My father was a good-looking guy as well, but he had the fashion sense of an old order Mennonite. He didn't care about clothes. He only cared about being clean. He was a house painter, and he bathed every night after work, and he had to scrape the paint off the back of his head and the back of his ears to be sure that he always looked shiny and spotless. However, since he had no sense of style, as long as his clothes were laundered and unblemished, he was happy. And since he didn't care about what he wore, and he didn't like to shop, my mother bought his clothes for him. Now, this applied to everything but his pants. For some reason, my father loved permanent press, polyester pants with stretchy spandex waistlines. He thought they were a technological wonder, and he was thrilled to find those pants available for $3 a pair in full-page magazine ads. Now, back before Amazon, sending away for something was called mail order, and my dad was quite excited about the concept of mail order pants and about having never to set foot inside a men's store again. Now, to me, those pants that he was wearing were very ugly, but they were reliably clean. My dad's cleanliness is actually at the root of a family legend about why my mom fell for him. Apparently, my dad's fingernails were always scrupulously clean, and that was somewhat uncommon in the gritty industrial town of Yorkshire, England, where my mother was raised. Surely she knew that my dad was in the Canadian Medical Corps and was required to have clean hands for when he had to dig a bullet out of somebody's liver. Nonetheless, for her, it was some proof of some sort of a cultured fastidiousness that made my dad especially acceptable as a spouse. But anyway, I digress. We rejoin the story. In the summer of 1958, I'm growing up. I'm heading for the new junior high school. It's time for me to get some groovy school clothes so I can make a good impression on my new classmates. Before this shopping trip, my mom had simply bought my clothes as well. So this was to be my first in-person clothing shopping experience. Before we started, my mother asked me, what colors would I like to wear? I had no idea about colors. And so I turned the question back to her and I said, well, what are the best colors to wear? And she told me that a boy or a man could never go wrong wearing brown. That brown was a manly color and that it would signal my masculinity to anyone who cared to judge it. And I was fine with that. So we went to Rhodes Department Store in North Seattle and she bought me brown stuff. She bought me brown pants and brown shoes and a light brown shirt and a brown vest with red, white, and blue stripes on the front. So on my first day, I was a totally brown guy with some colorful patriotic stripes. On that day, if God had cared to look down upon me to see what errors his creation had wrought, he would have seen something that looked like a walking turd draped in a small American flag. Nonetheless, I felt good about myself and how I looked. In short order, I realized that how I looked didn't matter. No clothing and no nothing could change the fact that junior high school was a psychosocial horror show for any new kid and any outsider. It seemed to me that everyone was in a clique and that those cliques had no use for my kind. As far as I could tell, there were no other Jews. I knew nobody. I felt like I didn't belong. I was anxious all the time. Plus the final indignity. All of the cool guys at school wore white Levi's and buttoned-down pastel 100% cotton shirts. None of them seemed to favor the all-American brown turd look. I finally made one friend, Ernie Hayashi. He was another outcast from the uncool world. Oddly, he wore brown slacks, too. When we walked down the hall together, the cool guys would sneer at us and call him a fat Jap. Neither of us knew what to do about that. So anyway, junior high school was a nightmare, and it didn't take me long to realize that how I was dressed made no difference in that whatsoever. So there it was, my first wardrobe malfunction. And what did I learn? What is the moral of this story? In the best of all possible worlds, I would learn that what you wear doesn't matter, and that looking like a pile of striped excrement was okay, and that what is really important is the kind of person you are on the inside, and that would be the best thing to learn. But this was not the best of all worlds, and unfortunately, I was not a high-minded, principled 12-year-old. What I took out of all this adolescent angst was that being an outcast was not fun at all, and that I needed to do whatever was required to change how I was regarded by the cool kids, up to and including getting my mother to buy me some white Levi's and some groovy button-down 100% cotton shirts. In retrospect, it's kind of sad and pathetic, but that's how it was. Adolescence in America, when I was growing up. Maybe it's like that now. I hope not. But that's all for today. Next week, we'll have more adventures in learning to dress myself on the Midlife Crisis Dance Party. I'm Ray Serebrin, and that was Stories from the Midlife Crisis Dance Party. We invite you to tune in every Thursday at 3 p.m. for more frivolity, absurdity, and melody. Thanks so much for listening.